Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Dark Goddess Craft, A Journey Through the Heart of Transformation by Stephanie Woodfield, narrated by Romy Nordlinger. Disclaimer: any internet references contained in this work are current at publication time, but the publisher cannot guarantee that a specific location will continue to be maintained. Please refer to the publisher's website for links to authors' websites and other sources. The publisher and the author assume no liability for any injuries caused to the reader that may result from the reader's use of content contained in this publication and recommend common sense when contemplating the practices described in the work. Introduction. It is twilight, and I stand in a grassy clearing in a loose circle with others as we celebrate the equinox. Slash pines tower around us, looking like giants in the fading light. It has been a weekend of connecting with old friends and meeting new ones, teaching and coming together. My spirit feels full and light as my friend leading the ritual tells us to sit, to feel the living ground beneath us as he begins to walk us through a meditation journey. His voice is calm and soothing, and I follow along easily, slipping into a trance. But there is someone else there in that space between spaces, and she decides she has something different to tell me. A moment ago I could hear my friend's calm voice. Now it is suddenly gone, as if someone has flipped a switch and muted him, and so is the imagery he was creating. Now I stand in what almost seems like a swamp or a low, quiet lake. The water comes to just below my knees, and it moves slowly among the reeds and tall grass. But this water is as red as blood, and before me stands a woman. I know I am in the river of life and death, the river of the Washer at the Ford. The washerwoman stands tall and sleek before me, her arms and legs long and willowy like the reeds that surround us. This time she wears a veil over her face. Other times her long black hair falls over her face like a shroud. She stoops over the water and washes something in her hands. I cannot tell if it is a dark garment, the bottom of her own ragged and flowing clothes, or something else entirely. She wrings the garment in her hands, her long, almost clawed fingers running down them and ripping invisible things away. I have met this face of the Morrigan many times before, but with some trepidation. I ask her what message she has for me. She points further out into the water, which has no shore and seems to go onward in every direction forever. The water begins to ripple, starting at my feet and moving forward into the distance. And then I begin to see the ritual circle that I sit in again, the solid ground beneath me, and the two images merge. The ground, which seemed so unmovable before, is nothing but a rippling water, fluid, changeable, and reshapable as the ripples move through them. Nothing can withstand the change I bring, do you understand? The ripples in the water are small, but they feel like a tsunami. I feel the force of them washing through me, and I feel compelled to walk forward through the waters, the ripples changing everything around me and propelling me forward at the same time in an unstoppable wave. You have asked me for change. You have set the wheel in motion. Nothing can stop this now, not even you. And I know she is right. I've begun to make changes in my life, one whose consequences I know will reshape my life. But this is the kind of reshaping that involves buildings crumpling and the ground beneath my feet being pulled away. If I do what I need to do, I will have to destroy so many things in my life and see what I can rebuild out of the rubble. But the cost of not doing this would be even greater. Still pulled onward by the river, I turn to see the washerwoman walking beside me. It is hard to see her face behind the veil of wet hair. What stands out are her blood-stained lips and the words she speaks, which move through me like the rippling water. Remember that you are worthy. This will come to pass. No man or god can stop it now. And then the river and the washerwoman are gone. I see just the darkness behind my closed eyes, hear the calm, soothing voice of my friend as he continues to guide the others through the meditation. I take a breath and try to ground myself. I put a hand on the ground and run my fingers through the grass. The ground is solid, but I still feel the shadow of the rippling water. I went home from that festival feeling grateful for the washerwoman's message and determined to make the changes that over the last 2 years I had been coming to terms with and working through in many different ways. Change can be a slow process. Little things lead you in unexpected directions. And other times, change can be as quick and cutting as a sword. I didn't expect my life to fall apart, regardless of me initiating the changes. The very next day after my flight landed. But it did. And the washerwoman had been right. I had laid the groundwork. And on some level, I was convinced she had as well, for the things that happened. I ended an 11-year relationship. I nearly found myself homeless, and I was reminded that blood family isn't always family. I learned that I had some amazing friends, I moved across the country, and I learned that I did deserve happiness. Just because I could try to hold up the weight of the world didn't mean I had to or was supposed to. I had to learn to feel and own my own self-worth. Nothing was easy about these changes. Nothing ever is with a Morrigan. But I don't regret it, and it was worth it in the end. She is not the only dark goddess who has challenged me or dug her claws into my soul and made her mark. And she will not be the last. As painful as that part of my life was, I cannot help but be grateful. Life is about changing and growing, about tearing away and learning and relearning who we are and who we can be. It's never easy, and it isn't supposed to be. The dark goddesses that have walked by my side during such times have wrapped black wings around me, mourned alongside me the pieces of myself that were no more, and at times forced me to get up and fight. For that I will always be grateful. Sometimes their lessons came easily, other times they were a painful process, but I always emerged stronger in the end and with a greater understanding of myself. Working and building a devotion to dark deities can be a rewarding process. And an utterly life-changing one. If you feel called to dark and dangerous gods, don't be afraid to embrace the path and to challenge what you think you know and how you practice. Follow the gods into the dark and be transformed. You may cry and scream and rage along the way, but you'll never feel more alive, and your life will transform for the better. Part 1. Who is the Dark Goddess? It's time to get started. It's time to wake up. Don't wait another minute. Claim your heart and claim your glory. You have all you need. Marianne Williamson, A Woman's Worth. We call her the Crone, the goddess of the underworld, goddess of death. The Dark Goddess. She rules over everything that we fear. She offers us wisdom in exchange for pain. She is the Morrigan, inciting her favored warriors into frenzy on the battlefield. She is the washer at the ford, keening while she washes the bloody clothes of those destined to die. She is Hecate, who lights our way through the underworld. She is the terrifying Kali, who dances with abandon on the corpses of her enemies, wearing their severed heads as ornamentation. And she is Sekhmet, who drinks blood-like wine. She is sometimes terrifying, her lessons often painful, But the dark goddess dwells within each of us and is a vital part of our being. She is the force that shines within us in our darkest hour and the face we turn to when we seek rebirth. She likes nothing better than to break us apart, only to remake us anew. The dark goddess and the lessons she teaches us are vital to our lives. Her destructive aspects teach us that there is death within life, that we are constantly changing and evolving. No matter what we have been through in our lives, we can rise from the ashes and, like Kali, dance ecstatically on the ruins of our old selves toward rebirth. As the fierce warrior drinking the blood of the slain, she is a no-nonsense goddess, teaching us to make our voices heard, to stand up and be counted, and inspiring us to bring about change, both in ourselves and the world around us. And she is also the shadowy keeper of the dead, teaching us how to pierce the veil, to see into the future, and to commune with the beloved dead. But she is also the side of the divine that we avoid the most, and as a consequence, we often have difficulty working with her. Dark gods rule over the things we fear the most. Some fear that working with this aspect of the dark goddess will bring out the darkest or worst parts of themselves. Other times, we are simply afraid to welcome change into our lives and finally release the things we keep buried deep within our souls. While working with the darker aspects of the goddess may make you face things about yourself you would rather ignore, her path is one of transformation and ultimately one of healing. But where do we begin? How do we look past our fear and understand how to work with dark deities? My friend Gina will tell you that she thinks some people should have to take a test before they can work with goddesses like Hecate, the Morrigan, or Kali. I remember laughing at the idea as we sat around a bonfire in her yard one summer night, talking about how seeking out and working with dark goddesses had affected each of our lives, and how others around us were affected by the touch of such gods. But then I really thought about it. These goddesses have a habit of turning your life upside down, breaking down barriers, and bringing about needed but often painful transformation. Some who dive headfirst into the realm of the dark goddess, they may find themselves overwhelmed, frustrated, and oftentimes stuck. We lose our way in the dark and don't quite know how to grope our way through the underworld and shadowlands we find ourselves in, or how to face the challenges given to us. The dark goddess has a habit of hammering lessons into our flesh until we have truly understood and worked through them. When we ask the gods for change, they are more than willing to give it to us, but we aren't always ready to go through that process of transformation. But if it were an easy process, it wouldn't be meaningful. Maybe we don't so much need a test but a manual, a guide through the dark, a torch to light our way through the underworld, to give those who seek transformation a toolkit. It is my hope that this book will be just that, your guide through the dark, not only a guide to who the dark goddess is, but how to work with her, how to approach the work she gives us, bring true transformation into your life, and navigate safely through her realm. In the first part of this book, we will look at who the dark goddess really is, misconceptions surrounding dark deities, and how to go about transformation and devotional work. Throughout the rest of the book, we will work in depth with goddesses from multiple pantheons as we move through our own journey of transformation. You will find spells and meditations, as well as workings to aid you in your journey. You will also find a few spells and invocations from the members of the Tuatha De Morrigan, a group with whom I have explored and honored Dark Deity, hosted retreats, and held public ritual for the last several years. As each of these individuals has had unique and significant experience with the goddesses we will be working with, I offer their perspectives and include tools and techniques that these seasoned practitioners have used with success. Dark Goddess Craft is about delving into our own darkness and emerging renewed. It is learning how to dance in the void, knowing when to let certain aspects of our lives go, and making room for the new. It is a path of transformation, change, and healing. It is the art of learning to confront your shadows and truly discovering who you are. The Dark Goddess, in all her many faces and guises, stands at the threshold of the other worlds, waiting for us to learn her mysteries. Torch in hand, she waits to guide us through our inner darkness and lead us to rebirth. Will you follow her into the dark? 1. The Nature of Dark Gods. When I first begin working with a deity, there is a certain kind of protocol I go through. It is the same whether or not I have chosen to connect to that particular god, or they have, as gods so often do, just appeared out of the blue making demands in my life. The gods are very real to me. They are vibrant beings with their own personalities, tastes, likes, and dislikes. They move through my life like old friends, and at times, unexpected strangers. When you have heard the laugh of the Morrigan, it is impossible to confuse her for Caradwyn or Hecate. The heat and coppery taste of Eris's energy is nothing like the fire that fuels Kali's dance. The vastness of Hecate's presence is not the same as that of Ereshkigal. They are all very distinct from one another. And getting to know a god is not unlike the processes we go through when we build a relationship with a new friend or lover. You begin to learn that person's personality. With the gods, I start by learning the myths of those particular deities and about the cultures they originate from. I make altars, I make offerings, and I do journey work to connect with them. It's important to understand the nature of the god you plan on working with. Ultimately, I trust my gods. They are not strangers to me. Sometimes I don't know where they are leading me. I may face their challenges willingly or go kicking and screaming, but there is trust between us, because there is a long-standing, deep relationship there. To work with dark gods requires that we delve into their nature. We will work closely with the individual goddesses and their myths, but first, it is important to understand how dark deities as a whole function, who they are, how we have come to view them, and the processes they rule over. There are pitfalls and challenges to working with any deity, and there seems to be a consistent pattern to the challenges many of us run into when working with dark gods. And I think some of these arise because of how we are taught to approach the gods and how we have been taught to view change. Dark versus light. What exactly does it mean when we refer to a goddess or god as dark? Is this the darkness of the night sky, the void, the darkness where monsters live under the bed? Or for that matter, what do we mean by light? Humans have a tendency to want to put things as vast and unknowable as the divine into boxes, to categorize and simplify them in an attempt to understand them better. We label things in our search for understanding. It's human nature. In modern paganism, we often divide deities into two camps, dark and light. Essentially, the idea of a god or goddess being dark or light is a modern one. It has no real place in ancient culture. Gods in every pantheon have always specialized in certain areas, whether that be agriculture, healing, or ruling the underworld. But in general, that is where the categorizing ended for our ancestors. Dividing the divine into dualistic, often opposing natures is very much in line with our modern concepts of good and evil and stems from the influence of monotheistic religion. Today we like to think of the world in terms of everything having its opposite, instead of seeing that most things, including the gods, fall into a gray area. There is male and female, night and day, and good and evil. Dark deities are in no way evil, But what we have learned to do when we approach the gods in this manner is to label any deity that holds sway over a realm or concept that frightens us as dark. Gods who rule over death, change, war, violence, anger, and all the things that make life difficult or painful must also be dangerous and untrustable in some way, not unlike the things they hold sway over. What we often fail to see is that dark gods are not the cause of these things, but rather the very beings who teach us to understand them, who challenge us to move past our fears and give us the strength to face some of the more painful, unavoidable things in life. The deities we label as dark today would not have been viewed as malevolent by our ancestors. The things modern people tend to have hang-ups about are more removed from the lives of the ancient people who worshipped these gods. To our ancestors, deities like Mars or the Morrigan would be the kind of gods you wanted on your side if you were fighting a war or you were concerned for the safety of your village and family. We don't have to worry about invaders coming from the next town or apartment building to steal our food stores for the winter. In the past, a war goddess on your side was a very good thing. To ancient people, the gods we tend to treat with fear today would have been essential to their everyday lives, and conversely, the gods we tend to fear in modern times may not be so scary to our descendants. Maybe in 300 years, Aphrodite will be considered a dark goddess. Who knows? Defining dark as a term that always indicates something negative also has racial connotations. There is an element of cultural baggage around the idea that lightness is good or preferable, and being darker is shameful when it comes to skin color. There is even a myth about how Parvati is shamed by another god who calls her dark-skinned, and she takes measures to lighten her appearance. The darkness she sheds, transforming into the goddess Kali, whose name means black. We have to let go of the idea that dark, within any context, is a bad thing. These attitudes influence not just the way we look at each other, but how we perceive deity. The concept of gods of light is just as modern and at times rather misleading. We tend to assume that gods who do not deal with the things we fear all have motherly, loving traits to them. At times, I have found Brigid, who by modern standards fits this mold of being connected to light, to be just as challenging to work with as any dark goddess. She has her motherly side, yes, but her fires can burn you just as easily as they can spark inspiration. It is best to not assume to know the full nature of a god. Ultimately, I prefer not to categorize the gods. They are all very distinct from one another. They are multifaceted. Just as I am many things to many people, so too are the gods. You may be a parent, a spouse, a child, and a co-worker, and play many roles to different people, but you are still one person. When we put a label on something, we tend to forget that it is anything else but the label we have given it. It took me many years to see that the Morrigan has other aspects and faces. She can be dark and scary, but that is not the limit of her power or scope as a deity. The problem with labeling something dark or light is that we put blinders on and forget that the gods are more than the title or box people put them in. Throughout this book, I will refer to the goddesses we are working with as dark, but only because this has evolved into the terminology that we are most familiar with. I use the term dark only in the context of a grouping of deities that have similar functions relating to transformation. I suggest you take time to consider what the terms light and dark mean to you personally. Consider if thinking of the gods in these terms has limited your experiences with them, and if you are comfortable using or discarding this terminology. Are all dark goddesses crones? Terms like dark or light are ultimately just generalizations, and with them come certain stigmas. In general, when we are talking about a dark goddess, it is almost always assumed that we are also talking about a crone. While the archetypal neo-pagan crone is connected to death and some of the harsher mysteries the goddess embodies, the two are not mutually exclusive. In pantheons around the world, we find maiden and mother goddesses whose energies and lessons challenge us and teach us the mysteries of transformation and rebirth. We tend to relegate the happier and more appealing aspect of the divine feminine to the maiden and mother, and pack all the darker and uncomfortable things into the crone's corner. While the crone is certainly connected to death and transformation, the myths and stories of goddesses around the world show us that the maiden and mother figures also have a darker side. Hecate, who is more often than not portrayed in modern art as a hag or crone, is shown as three young maidens in early Greek art. The concept that she appears only as an elderly woman is a fairly modern one, fitting our preconceived image of what a deity that deals with death and the underworld should look like. Likewise, Persephone, who descends into the underworld for half the year and rules as its queen, is a maiden figure who deals with transitions and the world of the dead. Sedna and the Welsh Bloteuwedd are also both young goddess figures who face difficult times and embody the independence and self-ownership the dark goddess embodies. This idea that only the crone can embody the darker side of the feminine is why when the discussion of dark gods in general comes up within paganism, it is often assumed that one is exclusively talking about male deities. The lessons and nature of a god have nothing to do with gender. There are many dark gods that are powerful allies to work with as well. Hades, Ares, and Kromdov, to name a few. Part of why I chose to center my focus here on dark goddesses is because they are often ignored. We have acquired an aversion to seeing femininity as a force of powerful, destructive change. But just as the concept of being a nurturer is not exclusively female, the concepts of strong action and destruction are not exclusively in the masculine realm either. We need to question why we automatically pigeonhole a goddess that appears as maiden in her myths, or one that just so happens to be a mother, to certain relegated roles. The Irish Macha is a mother, and one of her central myths involves how she birthed her twins. But she also goes off to war, fights in battles, and is known for her prophetic visions and eye for strategy. So is she a mother goddess simply because she bore children? Case closed, end of story? Or is she something more, just as Persephone is more than simply a maiden? Are dark gods dangerous? The idea that a god is dangerous doesn't sit well with many people, and this is perhaps the biggest reason many pagans shy away from working with dark gods. The deities we classify as dark are those who deal with or rule over the harsher, scarier parts of life. They are the sin-eaters, those who rule over the land of the dead or usher spirits into the next world, those connected to the violence of war, those who have faced brutality in their myths, and those who have ruled over liminal and transformational space. Deities like this challenge us. They shake up our lives when they appear and force us to look at all the things that are uncomfortable about life and ourselves. In short, they are not happy mother goddesses who will pat us on the head and tell us everything will be okay. Instead, they are more likely to put a sword in our hands and tell us, like the Spartans, to come home with our shields in hand or laid on top of us. In short, they represent many of the things we are afraid of. And there is nothing more terrifying to most people than change. It's no wonder we are often reluctant to work with such gods, but more often than not, their transformational powers are exactly what we need in our lives. 10 years ago, saying the Morrigan's name at a pagan gathering was like saying Voldemort. She was that scary goddess, and I was often advised not to work with her. Now the Morrigan is one of the...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?